and welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and I'm so excited that you're joining us today. We are going to have a fascinating conversation, as usual, as we learn from people all around the world at all ages and stages of life. Stay tuned as we shift our dementia care from crisis to comfort.
Here we go. What you think about?
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks. We are going to have a wonderful show today. We have back with us Trin Rose Seely, who is just amazing. And we're going to be talking today about bringing out the best in care community staff members. And that is a huge issue these days between shortage of staff, ability to train, keeping them, interacting with families, and of course, their clients. So I like I said, I just can't wait to do this show. Before I introduce you to Trin, which I know many of you already know, but she is, like I said, she's just full of grace and wonderful insights. I just like to give a couple of shout outs. And so one, I want to give a shout out to Twiddles. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they are a great sensory tool. You can go to twiddles.com and check out their tools that they have. They have these plush sensory tools that really emulate comfort and warmth and getting people engaged and active, which is what we all want. They also have another product called Adapt-A-Wrap, which is really fantastic when you're trying to get somebody dressed and maybe they're getting combative. It just takes the ease in the process because nothing goes over the head. Everything snaps into place really quickly. So go to fortwiddles.com for information on that. And then please visit alzheimerspeaks.com. Check out all of our free resources. We've been pulling them together since 2009, and there are just tons of things there to help you launch dementia-friendly communities, get involved with memory cafes, to being part of the radio show or dementia chats or dementia in the arts, our poetry section. It's always changing and growing. So please go ahead and check that out. And then also Dementia Map is our global resource directory. You can just go to dementiamap.com and scroll away. It's free. You don't have to give any personal information. And if you are a vendor, we encourage you to sign up and become a member, get your profile listed so people can find you. So with no further ado, let's go ahead and introduce you to Trin Rose. Well, Trin Rose, I'm so excited to have you back. I just love, love, love talking with you. You are always such a full, open heart and filled with great insights and tips for all of us. And the topic today is so critically important, talking about, you know, how do we create the best care staff in our communities? You know, it's just a critical piece that everybody's talking about. Everyone's kind of digging around trying to figure out how to do that. So I know you'll add a lot to that that people will be grabbing a hold of. But before we start that conversation, do you mind introducing yourself to our audience? You can do a much better job than I can.
Sure. Thank you, Lori. Well, I so appreciate the ways that you support the big conversation, capital C, about dementia support from people with dementia themselves to those of us who are advocates and support people. So thank you for your service to the country and to the world. My name is Trin Rose Seely. I do a program called Mindful Art, which is music, stories, and art opportunities for people with dementia and their caregivers. If I'm lucky enough to get to serve the caregiver as well, I like to create environments where everyone can thrive. And I've done this work for my whole life as a person sensitive to people who are aging and seeing the real person inside, whatever we're seeing on the outside. And that has expressed itself through many ways, from working with small children with special needs to adults with special needs, and then now people with dementia and supporting those who care for them through my programs. And I've written a caregiver book, which I can talk about as well, but just thrilled to be part of a system of caring that reaches further than the boundaries of, you know, small places that say, this is where people with dementia are, and here's the rest of us. No, we're integrated into society and into the communities that we are in.
I agree. I think we have to be inclusive, and I think there's so much to learn from one another. No matter what we're dealing with, somebody still has something to teach us. Even if somebody views them as less than or not as capable of, which I hate those terms, but I know that they're still used out there, they have a lot to teach us. And I think sometimes their insights are richer and deeper than our own, because we get so caught up in the busyness of the everyday life. So I'm sure we'll touch on some of that as we chat here too. The other question I always like to ask all of my guests is, have you been personally touched by dementia? It's just nice for our audience to know, in your own family or circle of friends or work, if you can just give us a little synopsis there.
Just briefly, we grew up in a family of five, and the middle child had grand mal and petite mal seizures all through his childhood. He passed away at age 9. But in that time that we grew up with him and around him and trying to figure out who Martin was, we all gained a sensitivity about people being still there and being there, even if we can't access it very easily. So my family members and I have all chosen fields where we can support, bring out the best in people's lives, from people with autism to people with Parkinson's. And I happened to land in the field of Alzheimer's 20 years ago, and I'm grateful for it. Just respecting people who've lived a whole beautiful life deserve the best kind of support that brings back the best parts of their life as I'm caring for them now.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. Well, let's dive into this topic here. You know, you've been in the industry a long time. So what have you seen over the years utilizing your creativity with full-time caregivers or carers, or, you know, there's 10 million names out there for people who care in communities, you know, in your career? I would imagine you've seen a great deal of change. I know I have.
Yes, yes. You know, the window through which you see a person makes the care feel like a drudge or like a gift. And I learned about people as a young person. Just my family was very interested in people and serving them well. My dad is still a college higher education professor and keeps active in that field in his 80s. He cares about people. What they know already is a value. And being a person at the front of a room, I can bring out the best in the people in that room on the topic that we're talking about. So it all applies to care communities that I've served in. I've served as a private caregiver in a single home. I currently am doing programs in a senior center and small care homes, as well as private clients in their homes. And in every one of those settings, it's important to enjoy the person and appreciate who they are inside. So over the years, in all the settings that I've worked in, using creativity was a natural for me, just the way that I was raised, to be a musician and to be interested in people and to be curious about what somebody has to teach me. So as I was a full-time caregiver, I would find out what this person needs in front of me here. What does this person need? And what does that person need? Do they need a joke? Do they need a quiet word? Do they need just a walk that with no words? Do they want to be laughing? Do they want to be listened to? Do they want somebody who just can sympathize with them? How can a person be recognized and heard for who they are, who their essential self is? And that's just something I knew how to do and love to do and still love to do.
Thank you. You know, when you were talking about that, I'm glad you brought that up, because that kind of drudge to gift, what is it? And part of it's going to have to do with how we were brought up, you know, in terms of what is our perspective. And then, you know, as you enter the workforce, it's like, what's the corporate philosophy? But then there's also the educational level in there, you know, in terms of what people are taught. And then there's the practical side of what they're actually able to do within their job description. Because sometimes I see the education, but I don't always see the ability for people to align that the education that they've learned and apply it sometimes in their work all the time. Mm-hmm. And so those perspectives are critically important. And I don't think everyone always looks at kind of that big picture of, you know, how involved all these things are. We kind of write it down and we think, yeah, this is the way it's going to go. But there's a lot of diversion that can happen, or synergy, depending on what's going on within a company and within a person themselves, you know, what they feel they want to stand up for and be and do and emulate. Now, the programs that you've brought out for people that you serve, and your book and your music program, can you tell us a little bit about that and how that kind of works into bringing out the best?
Yes. It's something that my father and I like to say to each other. And in settings, we were just at a music festival on the weekend. I played music on stage and he played percussion. And we always say we like to bring out the best in people in every setting, and whether it's our social connections or our work situations. So creating a safe space for people to thrive is the bottom line. It's the bottom line in everything that I try to do. So as a full-time caregiver who was helping people, you know, shower and get dressed and get their medications and get their breakfast and have something interesting to do for the day, so they're not frustrated and they're not confused and lost, they're anchored and grounded. This is how I learned to do this practice. And I call it a practice because it is a practice to bring out the best in people. It creates joy for all of us. And it builds authentic relationships. So there's trust. And then we're doing these personal, very personal tasks of activities of daily living. We're strolling down the hall to use the restroom because we've got a lunch date. I'm here to make sure you're all ready and freshened up. Let's do it. We're in the bathroom. We're out of the bathroom. It's not about let's go to the bathroom. You haven't done that yet. Shame on you. It's nothing like that. It is about a real life, a real experience of life that people have experienced for their whole lives. They've been in charge. They've been hosting their families, their friends, you know, naval wives, executives. They know this. So how can I treat them now with the same gentle and loving care and respect that allows them to thrive as high, the highest level that they can in the state that they are in of confusion, of frustration, and re-anchor them so they can thrive? Then everyone's happy. Then the system is working smoothly and beautifully. So music, stories, art, photographs, looking at people's lives, showing their, you know, what's wonderful, Lori, about being in the industry so long, almost 30 years now, we've seen the shift, right? We see that people get it. They have pictures outside everyone's door that says, this is Mabel when she was 12, when she won the flower arrangement contest. Bing, that's like the best picture of her life. It's right there on her door. So anyone who walks up to this woman's door knows who she really is inside and cares about her. There's a little description of some highlights of her life. This was not happening 30 years ago in the care homes. It was more like, let's get them up. Let's get them to the kitchen. Let's get them fed. Let's get them. Oh, they're bothering me. They're knocking on the door. They're trying to get out. I saw this situation. I thought, well, let's turn this around. Let's make this better. And I call care homes care communities. Feels very important to me to use words. Words have power. To use the words that are nurturing and supportive. If it's not a community yet, it should be. And now you see these designed care communities that look like a town square, and they look like a neighborhood, and there's a bench outside each person's door. They can sit and visit, and they can wave, and they can have company. You know, people with dementia still want all those things. So if we can create spaces for them to do that and invite their own friend onto their bench and chat, what a gift that is to them. What a gift, and a gift it is to the industry, frankly. So there's not people walking in the hallways, confused, lost. They have a place to go. They know where to be. And it's designed to guide people into these social and enjoyable situations.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You said so many things that I have to touch on. One, I remember when my great aunt was in the nursing home back in the day. And this is still in some people's minds, but you know, it was dark, it was dingy, people were in wheelchairs, they were drooling, they were lined up in the hallway. It was just get them out of their room, get them down for a meal, but there really wasn't much for engagement. And, you know, that was such a stigma to have to crush. But in order to get rid of the stigma, the system had to change, because that was a lot of the delivery system, you know, back in the day. And then I saw communities being built that were, you know, big and beautiful, and everyone got overwhelmed with, oh, this is pretty, but the care style hadn't totally changed yet either. It just looked pretty. And some of the things that, you know, I was in real estate during part of this time, some of the things I saw was we were putting stuff in that our people didn't really need, but it gave comfort, and it was kind of those aha moments, or, ooh, this is beautiful. You know, like whirlpool tubs or high ceilings that echo, and, you know, get cobwebs and all kinds of different things that can be issues for people. So it's interesting that the transformation that occurs. But you had mentioned, you know, bringing out the best in people. And you just normally do that with your personality. I love the example that you gave of, you know, just going to the bathroom. It wasn't, hey, we got to, you know, you got to go to the bathroom, or we have to change you, you had an accident, or whatever it was. It was like, let's get on to the next thing. There's more to life. You know, this is just a little pit stop that we have to make so that you can really enjoy the next session. You talked about framing care as a practice, and practice makes perfect, but I don't think we ever really reach perfection, because we have our good days and our bad days, you know, in terms of how we're going to apply it or how people are going to react to us. But knowing that it's fluid, I think is a huge thing in communities and just in healthcare in general that needs to be accepted. This isn't a black and white, you know, an A to B type thing. You really have to be fluid. And then you talked about the approach. Again, kind of going back to that bathroom example that you gave, was just, it was such a simple way to go about doing something that needed to be done, doing it with dignity, having fun, and doing it on an upbeat level.
And purpose. There's a purpose. You know, what are we doing here in a care home? Mm-hmm. We are helping people finish with dignity. They're finishing. Mm-hmm. They're not probably going to be leaving that home. They're going to be there until they pass, or they will have to move to even more intense care than they have now. So if we can get that clear, both the caregivers who are doing the everyday, all day work, and those who are the leadership, if we can understand and really appreciate and value this system that we've created, it could be a joyful and energetic place. We know what it looks like when it's not that way. And what it feels like when it is full of life is vastly different and very satisfying. And I'm a staff member who wants to stay. And I want to give everything I can to that place and give my commitment and my energy. And I'll actually leave with a positive feeling instead of exhausted at the end of the day. And I'll just tell this a couple of examples of some of the ways that I learned this just by doing, just by considering that, taking that meta step back and saying, okay, if I'm doing this work every day, I come to this building and I'm caring for people who have dementia and they're probably going to pass away here. What am I doing here to help them feel good, to process life, to be full of life as they can be? So if a person is in bed, they're not ready to get up, how can I help them face the day? Because if they don't, they're going to be up in the middle of the night, and the person who's overnight is going to be exhausted, and it's going to be a crazy time when they're trying to, you know, get laundry done and just make sure everyone's not falling out of bed. Now they're up and walking and want to eat food and talk. And, you know, how can we kind of create a system that allows people to thrive the best? So I would go into a room, and different people had different personalities. So it was different for each one. It's not exactly a formula, but the formula is, how can I help this person face the day? So often I would, you know, tiptoe to the closet, get some clothes, some beautiful clothes, lay them in the bathroom, turn on the shower. We'd figure out if that person liked a morning shower or an evening shower, or if it was a spa day, you know, spa bath. Some people really love that spa bath, and we called it the spa day, and they just loved that. We figured out how to keep them hygienic and happy by figuring out what's the best timing for them. Mostly it was morning. So the shower's going, clothes are ready, and I'm walking in, just making sure if they're awake, and saying, hey, you know, there's a breakfast date. We have a breakfast date today, and I'm here to make sure you're there on time, and I'll make sure you get there just perfectly. And they look at me and say, what? There's a breakfast date? Because that's what we all do, right? We like breakfast dates. They're fun. Let's go have brunch. This is real life. It's authentic. It's real in the context. That person is up in the shower, getting dressed, giving me their clothes. You know, sometimes it's hard to get people to change their clothes because they feel like, I'm dressed, leave me alone. I don't want to do that. This person is taking off their clothes, getting in the shower, putting on the fresh clothes, we're putting on makeup, we're out the door and going to breakfast, because that's real life. So I feel blessed to have been in a situation where we had a small care home in one situation and others were larger. But this one was where we had time and resources to help each person have a unique experience, rather than sort of driving the force of, you know, we got 40 people to get through the breakfast, and then to what are they doing next? And are they wandering? Are they watching TV? You know, I've done it in both places, so I have things to share about the larger groups. But the smaller groups, you can just, every person responds to, there's a breakfast date waiting for you, and I'm your ticket. Woo! One lady would say, I have something to tell you. I have Alzheimer's, but I don't want anyone here to know. And I would say, your secret's safe with me. I am not pointing out her shortcomings. I am not pointing out her faults. I am pointing out her strengths and bringing out the best in her. She knew she had a condition. She knew it. She didn't die. She died there beautifully, but she didn't. It wasn't like she faded into lower stages. She was fully present. It was probably frontal temporal. I didn't always know what kind of dementia people had, but she went from, I'm embarrassed, to I'm really happy, to I'm ready to go. She organized things in her mind, and her hands were in the air when she was dying. She would put things, she was putting things away, right? And we were there, the daughters were there, and I was there sitting with her. And I would say, Judy, you are putting all the linens away after Thanksgiving meal. Thank you so much for all the beautiful parties you've hosted for your family and keeping us organized so we know where they are next year. I mean, I'm starting to cry just thinking about this woman, because she's a real person. She's not a number. She's not a problem. She's not a behavior. She had things that were difficult in her experience, and we had to work with that. But we were working from a high ground for her. Who is this person? Respect her. She's beautiful. She wants to look beautiful. She wants to be powerful. She wants to be herself. She was herself until she was done. And that's what we can do, even on a large scale. in those small ways, just the window through which we see a person makes a difference about the kind of care that we can deliver. And if those care homes at the leadership level recognize what magic these caregivers bring every day, all day, then they feel safe to even express that love even more to their to the people they care for.
Oh, again, so much you said there. I want to go back to, you know, saying, using the term care community, because we all want to belong. We all want to feel like we're part of a community. So using that phrase to get somebody down to breakfast, you know, you do, you want to spruce up, you know, if you're going to go see friends, and now you've made something that is a routine into an event. You know, and that's a huge difference. Just flipping that pancake is just such a massive, massive change in terms of how people perceive it and how they want to engage with it. The tone of your voice as you say those things is different than, come on, let's go for breakfast. It's time for breakfast, you know, because that's kind of how it's heard. I remember back in the day, I worked in a large community, and this was back in the 70s, so this is a long time ago, and it was a home for developmentally disabled, and we ended up getting closed down by the state because they were just, everything had to go into small group homes. Nothing, no one could serve unless they were a small group home. And as a staff, I was so greatly disappointed that they did not see the value of how we had to care. You know, they didn't see the personal side of it at all. And they thought it could only be done in a small way. And I was like, I was so saddened by that. And it, but it got down to this task management and a pitch that was sold. And no one really looked, in my opinion, at big picture. Because you can bring those things in large communities. And granted, there was stuff, of course, we could have done better. We could have done different. But they didn't, in my opinion, have to close the doors and say, you're not valued. And then we went from small group homes to, oh, maybe we do need bigger places, you know, that they kind of merged back. But it's just like looking at what are the goals first in terms of how we're going to care. How are we even going to chart that? How are we going to grade that? How are we going to appreciate that? Like you mentioned, you have to allow your staff to be loving and kind. And, you know, in this age of lawsuits and stuff, a lot of people are fearful of how someone touches or talks to somebody. And, you know, we get really judgmental with that. And granted, we have to protect our vulnerable adults. I totally get that. But I think sometimes, you know, it just, the pendulum swings too far. And we block that off. And to me, that's some of what I've seen over the years that we got micromanaged with our staff. I mean, even sales staff were told, this is what you have to ask. These are the questions you have to log. And, you know, people that they were talking to, families, knew it was a structured interview, knew it wasn't coming from the heart. And the staff would tell me all the time, ugh, I can't really get to know this person. I can't ask the personalized questions because I have to chart this to do my job. And I think that that's a huge piece that needs to be looked at, because there's so much brilliance when you communicate on an authentic level, when you allow people to build their relationships, and your relationship's going to be different than my relationship. And it should be on a lot of levels, though we might have the same job to do. We're gonna do it a little bit different, and you know, that's okay as long as no one's getting harmed. But do you feel sometimes that's getting missed, or do you think that's I think it's improved in some ways over the past few years, but I still think we have a long ways to go to have that be a true standard. I also want to introduce you all to QBlocks. They have been absolutely excellent to deal with. They have been in business for 18 years and they serve the globe. I can't say enough good things about this company. I've had a lot of bad experiences, I don't know about you, with tech companies. They have made a very complicated process very easy, and their staff is so kind, so polite, so respectful to work with. And, you know, when I am frustrated and ready to pull my hair out, they just smile and tell me everything's going to be okay. And they really are just on top of the communication, which alleviates so much stress as an owner when you're dealing with tech issues. You can get a 10% discount. Visit them at QBlocks, at QBlocks.com, or you can email them at letstalk@qblocks.com. For that 10% discount, just put Lori, L-O-R-I, in the inquiry form. And again, I don't think you'll be disappointed. I surely haven't been. I can't rave enough about this company. And that's kind of rare these days.
I can look back now, and it's been several years since I've worked in a full-time, full-care community. I can look back now and appreciate there were people, well, we were all what's called cross-trained, so we could do everything. We could focus on, I would focus on medications one day a week. I would focus on activities another day of the week. I would focus on, you know, kitchen and beds another day of the week, so that we're rotating our staff and we're flexible and able to, so everyone can do the exercise circle and everyone can, you know, make sure that people are being cared for in every aspect. So I really appreciated that kind of training and that kind of philosophy, because we were not just wooden automatons walking through the building trying to just put people in their spots at the right time and stuff like that. And the place I worked before that was larger, it was 50 people. I loved being able to, as an activities person, look at the needs of the building, because I've always had that step back and look at the whole, is the whole system healthy, or what's a struggle? What's not working here? What is working and what needs some support? Where can I serve? Where can I help make things better? So I noticed that I would be, as an activities person, I would be there during the day, leaving at 5 o'clock. They would serve dinner at 5. And then 6 o'clock comes and they've got a whole 50 people who are going to do what until 10 o'clock at night? Nothing. And there's nobody here to do something supportive. So I created a music evening. So I would do a music night that was from 6 to 7:30. It was only one night of the week, but it was a really important one to see, to have everyone, as many people as we could, would be sitting there enjoying the music and singing and joining in. In fact, there were a lot of miracles I can talk about another time. People who during the day were very quiet were singing every single word of every single song. I couldn't believe it. There's Marie. There she is. That's another whole topic. But being able to keep people occupied in a delightful way allowed the caregivers, other caregivers of the building, to take one person at a time to get their teeth brushed, get them settled in bed, take another person, but everyone else has something delightful to do. And I had guests come in and bring other kinds of music, auto harp players and trios. And it was just a really rich time of my practice, learning how do you support a community? This is a care community here, with staff, with leadership, with nurses, with CNAs, with the families who are coming in. We want you to give my family member the best care, right? Of course they do. And when they've come to a decision of putting someone in a care home, it's a big, big, big decision. And it comes with the pluses and minuses, or the losses and the guilt of the family caregivers, that I couldn't do it alone. I couldn't do it at home. I couldn't do it by myself. So we wanted them to, they're part of this community now. I want to care about that daughter when she comes in and tell her, thank you for your mom. I love your mom. Here's an anecdote about your mom this week. I have something to tell you. She's doing really well. In fact, would you like to come in and teach us about making those dream catchers you're always talking about? We would love to have a session with you, the daughter, sharing how to make dream catchers with everybody. What, really? You want me to? Yes, you're part of the community. All these levels are part of this community that we've created. It can be as boring and lonely as a, you know, a nursing facility, or it can be a life-giving care community a space for people to thrive.
Oh, I so agree. I think I had a similar experience of kind of looking at things at that higher level too, and seeing where gaps were. And, you know, what you were doing with your music was allowing others to do their job easier, mm-hmm. and plus entertaining and engaging. And again, I think, and I know some people don't like talking about it, but I think the micromanagement crushed some of that stuff. And we need to get that back, because people are going, where's our teams? Why won't they help out? Because you haven't let them. You've told them they got to stick in their lane. And I loved when you talked about the cross training. That is so important, because then people aren't fearful to step in. You know, they've got an idea, and it's just a normal, it's like growing up in a family. You do all kinds of different things in a family. And you do all kinds of different things for your friends. If it's comfortable or not, you step in and you step up because you're there to support. And it is a whole different philosophy. And when you create that, people don't want to leave. Even if your company starts getting a little toxic, those people hang on because they get the importance of their job. They understand the relationships that they have. And what the clients and the residents mean to them, and what they mean to the residents. You know, it's not a job. It's way more than a job. And I think the only way to create that is to kind of open up the floodgates to let that grow, and let the creativity of staff bubble back up again.
Yes.
And I think we've kind of crushed that a little bit because of, again, the streamlining, because everything has gotten so fine lined and so defined. Now, granted, when COVID hit, that kind of blew everything out of the water and changed things up, and creativity was not an option. I mean, it was a mandate. So what have you seen in terms of care communities now since COVID? You know, what did you see while they were going through it, and how have they emerged out of it?
Even just to touch back on the thought about toxicity in an environment, and it can happen in a family, it can happen in any work setting of any kind, of any subject. And often there's toxicity when there's fear and concern that people's needs aren't going to be met, meaning the leadership is concerned that the people doing the work are not doing it the way that they should, or the workers are afraid that if they make a mistake, they're not going to be supported, and they're going to not going to be asked, what happened there? Let's work on that, or let's make sure you have the resources you need to get to work. If your car's failing you and that's why you're late, let's help you with that. You know, there's all these dynamics of people, personal experiences within a system, and people can respect on all those levels, all those relationships, and how to help everybody thrive in that. With the COVID times, there was creativity that had to happen by people saying, you can come to your mother's window and wave to her, and that's all you get, because we don't know what to do. And we're stuck in here, and we can't even leave because there's a COVID outbreak, and we want to go home to our families too, but we can't. So, I mean, the kind of stress that the healthcare industry has faced through COVID times needs such care and respect for rebuilding these communities. I just take a deep breath, because it's so important to realize we're not just cogs in a system. These are real people some of those caregivers lost their lives for their jobs. They lost their lives because they got COVID and they couldn't leave the building to care for their own families. This is huge. So that deserves, you know, respect and attending to that. We need to raise wages. You know, I was paid $9 an hour to do this work. Like, this is complex. If you go online and look at the description for either a CNA caregiver or an activities assistant, even assistant, it's a huge, long, involved, personal wisdom kind of list with a lot of skill set, with a sensitivity, with energy, with organization, with ability to manage relationships. And you want to pay them $9 an hour to do all that? Are you kidding me? No. Now we're towards 11, 13, $15 maybe. Some people that I know who worked in the medical field said, I'm getting better pay at McDonald's. I mean, that's ridiculous. Those people do not need to be flipping burgers. They need to be doing this involved and careful, gentle, thoughtful work for our humanity. So pay people better, you know? That's the short answer. And so that's advocacy for the government. It's advocacy for things to change, and they're going that direction. But it's really essential to support the people who are actually showing up to do this work. If they're showing up within COVID times and after, and now people want to become nurses and they want to become caregivers, gosh, help them in every way you can. They're doing really important work.
Oh, I so agree. To me, one of the impacts of COVID was that the outside felt what it was like to be a resident. They felt the isolation. All of that changed. And I think once we can get people to feel the need, then we speed up the process to change our services. All of a sudden, isolation and depression is an epidemic. All around the world, people are talking about that. That was not discussed really before, but that like cracked the nut open, going, now I know what it feels like for my mom or dad to not have someone to talk to. And they wanted to get in through that window just as much as the person wanted to get out, for a hug or the hugs through the door. Remember those with the arms and where they could hug through the plastic? It just like broke my heart. I had a friend whose brother took a ladder and climbed up two stories to see his mom because he couldn't see her. And he did that twice. And if they would have caught him, they would have died just because of liability. But it's like, get a cherry picker, guys, and bring these families to engage, Elevate it, make it a public event of what you're doing and how you're doing it, and celebrate the changes that you're going through and how you're meeting the needs. I just think that that is so important for people to not forget what we've learned through that process. And I know it's tough with the shortage of staff, but again, if you truly create that team, you will draw people in because those people you want to hire, they're looking for community too.
Yes.
And think about it, when I was younger, and I'm sure when you were too, that's where, I mean, my work peers, they were my community. I hung out with them. I didn't mind taking on another shift to help somebody out. It wasn't because I had to, it was because I wanted to help my peer.
Yes.
We've lost a lot of that because we don't even know our peers anymore.
Right. Well, we're celebrating now that we're all back together, and I really do see the trends going upward with all of this. It's natural now that people know music is so important. It brings memories back. It brings memories back for me when I hear those old 80s tunes. I'm back in high school wearing my hot pink hair and my hot green pants. I'm there exactly when I hear those songs. And you are with your songs, and any of us at any level are there in those joyful moments, and we're all celebrating that we're connected again, and we can visit our families, we can be part of the story now instead of being isolated, instead of being separate. And I think that every care home that knows that is going to be even more successful. And if again the leadership can respect that, those people who keep all that going, if they feel there's that safe place for them to thrive, they will be so committed and give their all. They will give their all, and it will benefit everybody. I want to just share another example, two stories of this larger care home that had 50 people. One of the funnest things that happened was I would start to do activities with everybody. You know, we were making lavender paper with my friend would come in, and we would pulp the paper in the blender and we'd put on the screens. And she, this director, started getting interested. She's like, oh, you guys are having a lot of fun, because she's doing all the director stuff, which can be very stressful. And bottom line, and is the building working, and getting that call at 3 in the morning that the air conditioner is broken. They are just as stressed. But how can we serve everybody? How can we, you know, change the verbiage from it being toxic to being everyone's getting taken care of here. Everyone's getting care. So she came and did, we had this great herb garden in our care place, and she did basil pesto with everybody. So everybody sat around, we put the nuts in the blender, we put the basil in there, we picked the whole plant, which was huge, brought it in, you know, people had, we had washed people's hands, of course, picking the leaves off, putting them in the blender, blending them. And we're putting the names of every family member on these little bins, put them in the freezer, because this was, you know, August when the basil was ripe. We saved them for Christmas. Well, what a gift. What a gift that the director even got a chance to visit and laugh. She was a very entertaining person, very funny, humorous, super wonderful. And she got to be in a situation where she could just celebrate and joy and be creative herself. And it really changed the dynamic of our environment, where the CNAs who are working could also celebrate. They're bringing the snacks, they're putting the little basil leaf in the thing, they're labeling, and they're seeing their director right next to them, partners in this community. It was very special. Very important. And then another time, I was running the Memories in the Making program, which was an art program for people to draw. Mostly it was watercolors at that time. This was 15 years ago or so. And I learned that there were several of these pictures that would get chosen for a larger auction in the city that I was working in where they would sell the art for to make money for the foundation, et cetera. And other artists in the city would pair their art with those people so that they would really, they would, you know, get thousands of dollars for their picture of the rooster, because the little picture of the rooster from the person with dementia and the large picture of the rooster from the famous artist in that city paired together raised money. It was a beautiful synergy that was happening there. But there was also a closet full of pictures that no one was choosing for this auction. And I said, could we have a Mother's Day tea to feature all the artwork of all these artists? Let's bring the families in. Let's show, they don't know this is happening. They don't know their mom has painted cardinals and instruments and flowers, and she's made these beautiful things. This man who was an engineer, he was drawing all these very specific drawings that were very geometric, and the son didn't know that. But let's have a tea. Let's have a Mother's Day tea and a Father's Day tea. And we posted all the pictures, and these people, these residents were like, you're putting my art in the show? And they know what art shows are. They've been to art shows. They've hosted art shows in their lives. This is real, authentic connections with community. And it was such a neat thing to see happen and to honor everybody's contributions, ways to pass the time. Let's expand that and make it an event that makes everybody celebrate. Let's celebrate what people can give and teach us and show us.
I love that example of the art, because people don't know what's really happening. And those are precious, you know, pieces that family can, you know, sometimes take home, and, you know, it can make their day by just looking at that. You know, maybe they'll go get it framed, or I that used to frustrate me so much when I would see all of the beautiful things that were done and families didn't know about, you know, what was going on. And I think it's critical. Plus, it's that giving value and purpose. It's that lifting up that you belong, you matter, and you contribute. You contribute in beautiful, beautiful ways. And, you know, we see that through the dementia and the arts that we do, how that makes them feel, and how even when they engage in the art, it it, you know, if they're having symptoms, they kind of go to the wayside for a while they're present doing that. I mean, so there's so many elements of this, and to be able to show everybody truly as they walk in the door, I would love to see all communities, instead of renting and purchasing artwork, use your residence, build a gallery, explain what you do and why you do it, and fill people's hearts and get them excited. You know, to me, that is only common sense. Plus, it would be a huge budget saver.
Yes. Currently that the art center, that it's not an art center. It's just a senior center that regular people are walking in. They're doing dance classes. They're doing art. They're taking lunch. They're playing Mexican train dominoes, and they are celebrating that everyone belongs in this community. And it's very important to remember that we're all here until we're done. We're not done. I just did a program last week, a music program, and it was mindful art. I call it mindful art, music, stories, and art, for a new care community that was just people with dementia. And I was told, now they're low functioning, so just be aware that they're low functioning. Well, I tell you what, Lori, you can't believe what these people said and did. We sang. We told stories about Valentine's Day because it was still kind of Valentine-y Day. And we made art. We made Valentines for each other. We made one for the director. We all signed it. And this is the kind of things that people said. Don't tell me this is low functioning. This is remarkable. Clicking the retractable pen. Here, let me hand you this pen. You can use my pen. You can borrow my pen. Should I write my first and last name on this card, or just my first name? And my sister and I always made art together when we were kids. And I would like to make a second card. Can I have another card for my brother? I mean, on and on and on. This is not low functioning to me, but you've created a space for people to thrive. And you brought out the best in them by simply talking about things that they love, things that they know to do, singing, laughing, connecting. They were taking care of each other with deep dementia. They knew each other's names. It's a miracle every time, Lori. This is why I do this work. It's a miracle every time. And I would like to see that happen for more people. It's the reason I wrote my book. It's the reason I've contributed to other books. There's another book called Dementia Friendly Worship that is this lovely collection of every kind of perfect service for a Baptist, a service for a Native American, a service for a Sikh, a service that a Christian would want. What do people want when they're at home or when they're in a care community where there's a chance to have a worship service? A Jewish person. Every faith is included in this book, Dementia Friendly Worship. It's wonderful. It's about the communities that we've created. You know, in the country, organized religions are diminishing, but it's not because people don't want to gather. People want to gather. The value of church communities is that people showed up for generations and said, this is important. So we're keeping that. We're keeping that value. We're keeping the value of showing up together, caring about each other, and celebrating together. So that drives all the work that I do. And I'd love to share it with more people.
Oh, we need to do a show just on that. And it's not just what they want, but it's what they need, and it's what they deserve, and how that helps them thrive. And again, each and every one of us have the wants, the needs, and we deserve those wants and needs, you know, to be met. And it's our positions to bring that forward. But part of that is listening and watching them express what those needs are. And sometimes they can't say it, you know, yes, I would like this, but you can see it through their reaction, how they're engaged. I wanted to know, with the arts, you know, that you did with this lower functioning group, how the staff responded to what you pulled out. Because I know so often they're just like, I can't believe that.
Here's what they did. They came and made cards with us because they could. They had time, they had space, and they joined us. And they, you know, the one caregiver that couldn't join us said at the end, as I was leaving with my bag, she said, "Wait, can you leave me some card material so I can make one too?" Yes, I can. Young lady, thank you for your service. You know, she couldn't wait to make her own card. And who knows what she did with it? Did she give it to a resident? Did she give it to her daughter at home? I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's like being ready to open a space for creativity to thrive and then letting go of the end result. You know, we did this whole card for this activities director, and she was bowled over. Everyone signed it with their own name. And they said, "Well, my name is Genevieve, and my mother's name was Genevieve." I mean, we just went on, like, all it just was like this. Do you know the musical Brigadoon, where it's every 100 years, this whole community pops up in Ireland, and then it goes to sleep again for 100 years. And this person happens to stumble in just exactly when this community shows up. It's like that. To me, it's like that. I the Brigadoon of these magical moments of creating space for people to really be authentically themselves. Then they show up to themselves. They have something to give, and they are so happy. And it lasts. This happiness lasts. And if the caregivers were part of it, they're going to do that too. It's not rocket science. It's not some special thing that Trin knows how to do that nobody else knows how to do. Everybody knows how to sit and talk and sing a little, show a photo, you know, do a life story, write it on a little card and put it on the table. Everyone can look at that. Everyone can access that. And then it just raises the energy level for everyone in that circle.
Oh, definitely. And it makes people want to come to work, bottom line. And it makes people feel like they're not put away, you know, that they are part of a community. When I was thinking, when you said, you know, and the one staff person said, "Can you leave me a card?" And I thought, and with that card will go the story of why I made this card. And it just, it's that ripple effect of kindness. You know, that's really what we're getting down to, is kindness and respect, you know, for one another. I can't believe we've blown through almost an hour. I still have a couple of questions I would love to get to. And one is, in summary, how can we attract and maintain happy and healthy staff?
I think we know by now. We have to treat them with respect. I mean, the quick sad story that I have to tell, and then I'll tell a positive one, is there was a wonderful caregiver that I knew. And I was the activities director, and she was a caregiver. She had to wake up at 4 a.m. to take her daughters, two daughters, single mother, to daycare, and then get to work by 6 a.m. And her car was failing. And there were 3 times that she was late, and they fired her. And I was so upset. Because can you imagine the thread that she was holding on to, making her life work and giving so much love and attention to all these residents all day, every day? That just broke my heart. So don't let that happen to your staff. Don't let that happen. That's to the leadership. Take care of your people, support them, and give them gift certificates, give them massages when they've lost someone. Everyone's going to be lost by the end of this story. We're going to lose people. They're passing, and hopefully they're passing with joy in their hearts because we've gotten to care for them well. And then for the caregivers themselves to understand that this system stays together because the executives are in their offices working to get donors, to get funding, to keep the building going, to expand the reach, to gain clients that they want to serve. It's everyone's in this together. So please just keep in mind that if there's creativity involved and joy, then there's joy and there's retention for staff. People want to give. People show up to this work because they care about people being treated well, and they deserve to be treated well themselves. So they keep their commitment. It's a beautiful circle. It's a circle that everyone belongs in.
Yeah, you had mentioned, you know, like executive directors are in their office and they're doing funding and paperwork, you know, the glue, keeping everything together. But I also really would encourage them to walk the walk, get out on the path, interact, lead by example, so that when somebody sees you walking down the hall, they're not darting in a room looking busy because they're scared you're out.
Make pesto with the crowd.
Exactly.
And whatever way that is, you know, maybe the director has a musical talent. Maybe they like to read poetry aloud. Who knows what they have? They're creative people because they're in that position. They wouldn't choose this industry unless they had a reason that they cared about people being well. So give them a space to also contribute in that way. And yeah, walk the walk, as you say, be part of the team.
Yeah. And when someone's struggling, like you said, how do you lift them up? I mean, the example of, you know, all the loss in the industry. And if staff are loving and connected, that's going to hurt. You know, they're going to feel that. So how do you support them? And each person is going to be a little bit different. I know some companies have, you know, ceremonies and stuff. But, you know, how do you do that? And do you say, thanks for hurting so bad because you cared so much? I mean, I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that. And that's why they're hurting so bad, is because they did their job and they did it well. And that needs to be looked at and examined and appreciated and supported.
They did their job and they did it well. Thank you. That's the perfect way to say it, Lori. Everybody feels that, then everyone's thriving.
Exactly. So for our listeners, how do you bring the best, how can they bring the best out in care staff too? So, you know, we probably have families and we have coworkers and maybe people who want to volunteer as well. What can they do?
Well, as I mentioned a little bit, there was a woman who would tell us as she came in, as she was the daughter of one of the people that lived at the place where I worked. And she made these dream catchers and they were lovely and they weren't that difficult to make. She would talk about them. And I said, well, please, if you're interested, we can get materials and we can make them together with people who would like to make them. And even if they can't make them, we can make them with them and we can talk about dreams and taking care of something that is precious to you. Not just that you're the daughter of the person we care for. You are also a person in this community and you can contribute. So inviting people to give their gifts and creating that space, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon or if it's 10 in the morning, those are kind of two really good high times of energy is 10 in the morning and 2 in the afternoon. No one's going to bed yet and no one's, you know, wanting to be lying down too early because then they're up at night. So create activity and put a space on the calendar for family contributions or family gifts or whatever you want to call it. Create that space for family members to be able to do that. And because family members want to give back, they're so grateful that we're doing that support and care now. If they're good, if it's good, they're especially grateful. So let's involve them directly and everybody's thriving in that environment.
Yeah. And I guess I'd like to add to that, that, it, you know, you might not feel like it's a talent, but maybe you go in and you read, you know, maybe you love to garden. And so I know where my mom lived, they had asked me to head up the family council. And I said, the only way I'd do it was that if I could talk with every month, one of the directors would come to our meetings. And we solved so many problems. But one of the things that came through this group, because they were so grateful to be able to have that direct conversation with maintenance, with the kitchen staff, with, I mean, we had everybody there, the secretary, just everybody came every month. We just had a different one we focused on. Well, we ended up getting people wanting to, you know, pitch in dollar-wise. We had people that wanted to use their talents. We had like a couple of them that were master gardeners. And, you know, they cut their budget in terms of having to care for that because they had volunteers out there doing that. And we raised money for a fountain and we did all these different things and we did them together.
Beautiful.
And, you know, people have different contacts. Sometimes, you know, they'll just know somebody. It's incredible, but it doesn't have to be big and stagey. It could be going for walks. It could be being a listening post and, or putting a puzzle together, or playing a game, you know, just visiting and getting to know people. So, but again, they have to feel welcomed in, and you have to ask, you know, because most people aren't going to just go, you know, can I do this? That's kind of scary, because they think if they're not seeing people doing that, it's not allowed. That's the first thing. But then when you start seeing people, I think as a family member, you know, my mom was in the nursing home for 14 years. When you see other people, some of the families start modeling after other family members, and then they start volunteering more. It's just this ripple effect that happens, but you have to create the environment of kindness and openness and creativity that, you know, none of us have this down pat. You know, communities in tow as well as individuals. We're all growing, we're all sharing. And I think the more we can work together, the better off, you know, we all will be in the long run with that. Well, Trin Rose, this has just been such a great conversation. You know, we could talk about this for a day and do a full conference on it. I just think so interesting. And I think it's easier to make these changes than what people think too.
Right.
It's stepping into it. It starts with a smile. It starts with some eye contact. Those things don't cost any money, and they don't take any time. You can do that walking by somebody in the hallway, but those little things have a ripple effect and can grow from there. So thank you for sharing all of your insights and expertise with us. Any last comment that you want to make?
Just that everybody wins when that's the situation, when everyone's welcomed and invited, and everyone has a contribution to make that community thrive. That's a win-win for everybody. That's why I wrote my book. I've written books about this and do my program live and like to do keynote speeches on this. It's not difficult. It's just real authentic life brought to these times of a person's life when they're finishing. Let's help them finish strong together.
Exactly. Well, Trin Rose, why don't you give a plug for your website and your book and how they can get that, or your books, I should say, and your contact information.
Wonderful. Well, I look forward to hearing from people who are listening. My caregiver book is called 15 Minutes of Fame. One photo does wonders to bring you both back to solid ground. This can be found on my website, which is caregiverheart.com. That's caregiverheart.com. And email me for printed copies at my email, which is trinrose@gmail.com. I'm on social media. I like to share all these strategies, and I share anecdotes from every class, whether it's a large group or a private client. There's always amazing things to share and miracles that happen when you bring out the best in people.
Agree. We're always open to learning, and, you know, but again, you have to open up your heart and your mind to know that there's lessons all around us to learn, and, you know, to reframe failure as a lesson. You know, a lesson to learn from. And I think if communities can, and people in general, if they can turn the switch on, that will make a lot more progress faster, because you won't go down the rabbit hole, but you'll go, oh, wow, we can improve this. We can do this differently. This was, you know, this is a great way to learn and not be ashamed of it, and even use it as a teaching tool, you know, amongst staff or families. It's okay to say we didn't get it right. Because we're not going to get it right 100% of the time. So stop pretending that you are, you know, and choose kindness and progression over being right and standing strong there. In wrapping up, I always ask our audience to be a giver of hope. Like, click, and share this episode. You know, I really think you could use this as a training session or bring it to an executive meeting and have a discussion about what we're talking about. And How do you want your community to care? How do you want it to be, you know, seen and perceived by others? And how do you create an environment that's open and comfortable and safe for not only your residents, but your staff and your families to thrive as one big community? So thank you, everyone. Again, appreciate you being part of the Alzheimer's Speaks community. We'll catch you next time. Thanks, Trin. Bye-bye.
Hi, everyone. This is Meredith from the Senior Fitness with Meredith podcast, where I discuss all things for seniors, from fitness, your health and wellness journeys, how to be all over strong and beyond. I also have my mini podcast called Motivation with Meredith. It's a great, quick, motivational pick-me-up for your days. Join me, listen now, search for Senior Fitness with Meredith on your favorite podcast platform.